Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. This week we have a great show. We have Rabbi Moshe Taub, who's the Rav of Hollingswood, the Young Israel of Holliswood, Queens. He's the former Rav of Buffalo. He's the Halacha columnist in Ami magazine, and he's also a Rav HaMachshir on many products. And he will be speaking about confidentiality in Halacha, emails, cameras, so many things that our grandparents never would have even contemplated. We will also have a small continuation with Reb David Cohn, the great Pesach Reb David Cohn, who will be speaking about Hafgas Kiddushin. Many of you have heard about the Epstein divorce and the great controversy that's going on about it. So we got a small clip from Reb David Cohn about that. And then we'll be closing off with our heroes in Yiddishkeit. We'll be speaking about Rabbi Yehuda Kassira, the great tzaddik who runs the Bikur Chaylim both in Lakewood, by Sloan, by Cornell. Now he's overseeing one in Cleveland as well as near Yale. We'll be speaking to him. And he also delivers food for over 10 hospitals. We'll have a small clip with him as well. I would like to also announce again our raffle. We do this every few months just to keep track of where our listeners are. And if you send us back an email with telling us which station you listen on, we will draw, and the top three winners will get a $100 gift certificate to their local Sfarim or bookstore. So, because you can listen to us on WMCA 570, that's on Matzah Shabbos, Saturday night between 11 and 12, or on NachumSiegel.com at the same time, or on Nachum Siegel on Monday morning between 11 and 12, or now on WSNR, which is 6:20 a.m. That's at Wednesday evening from 9 to 10, or on Highland Park Radio, which is WJPR 1640 a.m. That's also 11 to 12 Matzah Shabbos. We're also on the YeshivaNet. So if you send us an email and say, I'm listening on so-and-so station, we will take, and the top three winners, which we will announce, will win a $100 gift certificate, so send us your emails. You can send us also your questions to info@headlinesbook.com. So send your email telling us which station or any questions to info@headlinesbook.com. Now, I did get a very interesting email that I wanted to mention, where a woman writes me as follows. She says, "Dear Mr. Lichtenstein, you speak about highly sensitive and technical halachic issues on the radio. Now, you are not a practicing rabbi. Is it appropriate for you to be talking about these topics?" And she didn't mention her name, so I would like to just tell her, first of all, I do agree with you. I think it's a wonderful question. And she's basically saying, are you worthy to talk about Torah on the radio? And the answer is, absolutely not. We're in full agreement. But let me share with you a story. This is a story that the Chafetz Chaim told over. He said that there was an industrialist who visited one of his towns, you know, someplace in the hinterlands, I guess, of Russia at the time. And they were very honored, the city, to have him. He, I guess, employed many people in the city. And they gave him a glass of tea and some ragoloch or whatever they eat in Russia. And at the bottom of the glass of tea, there was a little bit of sediment, sand. So he looked at it. He said, "Why is there sand in my tea?" And they said, "Well, sir, we have a problem. All the water that comes from underground has sand in it. So when that's what we drink here." So he said, "So put in a filtration system. I'll pay for it." And he wrote a nice big check, and they installed a very hyper-modern, uber-modern, you know, filtration system. Well, a year later, he visits the town, and there's a fire in the town, and they call the fire trucks, and the fire truck pulls up, and it connects to the hose to the hydrant, and a little squirt comes out. So he says, the address says, "Why don't you have more water? That fire is raging." They said, "Oh, sir, you know, this is the maximum amount of water that the filtration system puts out." He says, "Idiots, when you're drinking tea, you put it through the filtration system. When you're putting out a fire, you don't care if there's sand in the water." So the Chafetz Chaim said, there are times when you're speaking about Torah, he says, when, you know, you need to have the most clarified and the most purified. He says, but when nobody's talking about it, then you don't use the clarification system, the filtration system. And whoever wants to get up and say Dvara Torah, he should say that. So to my dear Miss Borough Park, I say to you, I agree with you 100%, not worthy, but still doing it as per the Chafetz Chaim's instructions. I would like to say over us, before we go to our wonderful guests, I would like to say over a small thought on this week's parasha, which I think is relevant, and it has to do with, you know, all the kids that are off the derech, and we see so many of them, like, you know, be it on Ocean Parkway or around the lake or 7-Eleven, you know, sadly, there's many, right? So I had a thought, and there's a Rashi in this week's parasha. It says, by the end of Toldos, it says, Vayishlach Yitzchak is Yaakov. Yitzchak sent Yaakov to the house of Lavan. El Lavan, Ben Besuel Harami, Achi Rivka, Eim Yaakov Esav. He sent the beloved Yaakov to Lavan. And the Torah says, Lavan is the brother of Rivka, the father of Yaakov and Esav. And Rashi says, an amazing Rashi, he says, I don't know what this pasuk tells us. To inform us that Rivka is the mother of Yaakov and Esau, of Jacob and Esau. He says, if you haven't figured that out now, by the end of this story, you must have been sleeping in class. So let me propose to you an idea. So she's pregnant, Rivka. And it says, and in her womb, there was a battle going on. When she would pass by an inappropriate place, one child would come struggling to get out. And then when she would approach a holy place, the other child would struggle to get out. And she knew that there's real issues here. So what does she do? Vatelech l'drosh asolikim. She goes to shame the Aver. So listen to this. She has a father-in-law who's Avraham, the great patriarch. A husband, Isaac. Does she ask them? No. Where does she go? She goes to Shem Ve'ever. Like, why? I remember when I was studying in Eretz Yisrael, I remember a story that the daughter of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was married to the son of Rebbe Yashiv, or maybe it was backwards, but something like that. So she was in Gaul, and she was looking to buy sunglasses for Shabbos, and she asked the optician, I'm not sure if I can wear them because they were the photo grays. They change. He says, my father holds that it's muktza. It's not allowed on Shabbos or Noilud, whatever it is. And my father-in-law holds that you are. So should I or shouldn't I? Her father-in-law is Rebbe Yashiv. Her father was Reb Shlomo Zalman. So the optician looks at her and he says, father, shver, go ask a rav. Right? So here we have Rivka, her father-in-law is Avraham, her husband is Yitzhak, and she's going to ask Shem Vever. And then later on in the parasha, when she finds that one will be evil and one will be righteous, she doesn't tell anything to her husband. And then the evil one keeps fooling Jacob with all Yitzhak with all kinds of tricks, and she never says a word. Then after the brachas, what happens finally? She hears that Esav wants to kill Yaakov, right? Esav wants to kill Jacob. So what does she do? She goes into her husband and she says, I think Jacob should leave. Yaakov should leave. And he should go to the house of Lavan. Why? Because I just can't stand the local girls. She lies again. It's not because of that. It's because of he wants to kill him. And finally he leaves and she sends away the sons she loves to Lavan. So I ask you, why does she never tell Yitzchak what's going on here? Aramban, by the way, asked this question, but I want to pose another answer. She does. Why doesn't she say, we have one evil one and one good one? Like, Yitzchak, open up your eyes. Like, you know? And I propose to you, because Yitzchak realized that Esav needed a father. And the minute she would have told Yitzchak who Esav was, he would have been out. Yitzchak is din. Look what happened to Avraham when he had a bad son. What happens to Avraham's bad son? Out of the house, they take a broom. Whoosh, you're gone. Garish asam azayis vespina. She looks at the way Avraham's family deals with children who struggle, and she says, this kid, he's going to struggle. He's maybe bad. He needs a father. I'm not going to tell the father that he's bad. Her whole life, out of her love for Esav, She stays quiet. And then what happens? Then Esav says, I want to kill Yaakov. So at this point in time, she could send Esav away. But instead, she goes into Yitzhak and she says, Yaakov should leave because I want him to marry a girl from far away. And Yaakov leaves. And when he leaves, what does the Torah say? He leaves and he goes, and he's the son of, and he goes to Lavan, who's the brother of Yitzhak, who's the brother of Rebecca, of Rivka, who's the mother of Lavan, of Yaakov and Esav. And Rashi says, I don't know, what is it telling us that she's the mother of Yaakov and Esav? And I would propose to you, you know what it's telling us? That she is the greatest mother, the mother of all time, the mother who sends away the child she loves the most because she knows her other child needs parents. So she sends away the good one, the outstanding one, because she recognizes that the struggling one needs parents even more than this one. And it says, Aim Yaakov Esav. That is what an amazing mother Rivka was. Perhaps Pshat and Rashi. So let's go to the phones to our amazing guest with this really interesting conversation. You're listening to Headlines, Contemporary Halachic Issues. You can listen to us Matzah Shabbos on WMCA 570 from 11 to 12, or at WMCA.com or at NachumSiegel.com. Again, Matzah Shabbos from 11 p.m. to 12 a.m. Or on Monday morning, if you missed it, on Monday morning from 11 a.m. to 12 noon at NachumSiegel.com. Or now on Wednesday evening from 9 to 10 on WSNR 620 a.m. That's WSNR 620 a.m. We have the honor of having on the phone with us Rabbi Moshe Taub, who's the Rav of the Young Israel of Holliswood, Queens. He's formerly the Rav in Buffalo, New York, and he's the Halacha columnist of Ami magazine. He's also a Rav HaMachshir on many products. Welcome, Rabbi Taub.
Shalom Aleichem. Thank you so much for having me, Rabbi David. Very much looking forward.
Rabbi Taub, we would like to speak about confidentiality in Halacha.
Sure.
Because it is given, you know, we have with the NSA listening to all of our conversations, it's certainly something that, you know, Facebook, internet, is something that for any of the millennials and even for us older people, it's become very relevant. Let me start it, throw a question at you. I receive an email, and the email has in it, you know, so-and-so is dating so-and-so, and they already went out a number of times. It looks interesting. And I hit the forward button, and I send it to a friend of mine. Well, have I done anything halachically incorrect?
Well, first, let me just comment. As dangerous as the forward button is, the reply all button is even more dangerous. Yes, it would seem that you did breach at least a Gemara, it would seem, and maybe much more. There is, of course, a cherem, Rabbeinu Gershom. He maybe had about 15 cheremim. Only two or three are famous. And one of the more famous ones that doesn't relate to Nisuin is the idea of not reading other people's mail. And certainly, at least it would seem to me, that forwarding private correspondence would be a breach. There's a Gemara in Yuma as well.
Let me go back to that, Rabbi. My understanding of cherem Rabbeinu Gershom is reading somebody else's mail. So in other words, if Reuven sends a letter to Shimon, Levi cannot open up Shimon's mail. But does Cherem Rabbeinu Gershon include that Shimon, the recipient of the letter, cannot show the letter to another party?
This is a great question. There's a lot of tzichtzuch and debate precisely what Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom, this Cherem, was coming to do. Let me explain. It could be he was only coming to highlight and strengthen a previous Isser. I was going to get to Gemara and Yuma, which some say this is the major source. The Gemara and Yuma says that if someone shares something with you, directly related to your case, we learn this from the first Pasuk in
Vayomer,
Perek Aleph, right? That if someone shares something with you, unless they tell you you can share it with someone else, you cannot. If that's a halacha, is debated. So it could be the Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom is only coming to strengthen what may be seen until then as an agadata and stretching it into halacha. There are others who say that it is already a halacha, what halacha that represents is somewhat complex. It could be Gnevas Das, which forwarding an email may very well be. It may be grumma bin azikin. The Taras Chaim says it's a type of grumma that could cause damage, and we know that grumma by damages your chayiv. There are any number of opinions as to what the iser would be, and it would seem they would all apply. B'haplarecha kamocha, some say, Chakei Lev says this, in Yerodea, he says that. That's the iser here. Simple b'haplarecha kamocha, which would seem that you would be in breach of that in such a case. We should point out, there is a shita that holds that either the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom Stam or the entire rubric of sharing personal information is a breach in property, which may bleed into another subject, which is ideas if they're actual property. Meaning when you receive a correspondence that's from, let's say, Reuven, and you're Shimon, Reuven is lending you his property. And if I get a piece of correspondence in the mail, that's information therein sent to me is also privately held property. So for any of these reasons, even excluding the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, just the assumptive understandings of Yuma Daf Dalet by these various achronim would seem to suggest that sharing it would be very problematic.
But Rabbi Taub, the Din of Bal Yomar is not brought down by the Rambam or the Shulchan Aruch. The
Smag does bring it down.
Yeah, but the exception, either the Rambam or Shulchan Aruch bring it down. So, it's clearly tenuous whether it's halachically, accepted.
This is a fascinating discussion that we're having right now because there are so many halachas that, for example, eating eggs and onions overnight, where Ramesha writes, you could be somewhat lenient. That's why you find with the Star K and other Hechsherim cut onions because the Rambam, because the Shulchan Aruch don't mention it. Then we could get into the Maharshal and others, exactly the role of the Shulchan Aruch and his omitting something, the Rambam's omitting something, what that means, because the Magen Avraham does bring this halacha down. We should mention the Shulchan Aruch does not mention Lashon Hara. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention V'haftarecha Kamocha.
You're referring to the Magen Avraham in Kuf Nun Vav brings it.
Yeah, where he brings all of these. But with David, I want to point out, V'haftarecha Kamocha is not mentioned. Lashon Hara is not mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. I have a theory as to why it's out of the province of this discussion. But there are a lot of halachas not brought in Shulchan Aruch. But even if I could accept your argument, and it's a strong one, as I pointed out, Rav Moshe does accept it, even by Yerodea and Yanim, like leaving eggs overnight, onions overnight, I would still say these achronim point out there is another violation, meaning we don't need to codify Yuma Daf Dalet. We don't need to codify the limud, maybe the agadah to limud from that pasuk, because it's under the umbrella already of either Haftarecha Kamecha, Gneva Stas, Gama Ben Azikin.
Well, let's go slow, Rabbi Taub. Haftarecha Kamecha, though, is very fungible because, the Kamecha is your Kamecha and my Kamecha could be very different.
Rabbi Chanan says, and also goes back to the question of why the Shulchan Aruch doesn't codify so many dinim v'haftarecha kamecha, lashon hara as an example, and v'hafta. Rabbi Chanan says, very similar to you, that there's a great nafkamina between these type of halachas compared to be'al l'makom, that you find, for example, lashon hara, there's a concept of l'ta'elas. You don't have such a concept by Shabbos, by Geneva, in certain instances. Because it's so subjective, like what you're saying, it's very hard to codify. So if we accept the view of those achreinim, and they're the minority, who say that the iser of reading other people's mail is because of haftarecha kamecha, then ein achinami, you'll have to judge yourself if this was you, and would you want it, and if taka you wouldn't mind, then maybe you wouldn't be in breach. But we have to keep in mind there are other shitas, Gnevas Das, v'cholu v'cholu, that we mentioned already, inter alia, that it would seem one would be in breach of. I should also mention that, like any Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, for example, not marrying two wives, giving a get out of force to a woman, in case of a mitzvah, there are numerous tshuvas that sometimes we overlook them. So there could be cases by a shidduch that there is a mitzvah that you feel that you have to forward that email. So there are exceptions, halacha lemaisa. But to your point of stam forwarding it, I think there's enough shittas and achronim that say, look, we don't need a Gemara, just like we don't need a Gemara of every case possible that falls under the umbrella of any of these Yisurim, but it happens to be that this would fall under the Yisur. As to the NSA, by the way, because you brought up the NSA, I think, if I understand the news correctly, they're reading numbers. They're not seeing actual information, regardless of the fact that a country may have the right to break this if they feel it's in their
best. So let me ask you another question. You believe that somebody should not forward an email that has private information. Could somebody, because it's being Magala, somebody else's, it's revealing a confidentiality. Could somebody themselves who comes across confidential information read it without revealing it to somebody else? For example, somebody's in a room and it's a very thin wall and he happens to hear two people having a very intimate conversation with private details disclosed. Well, he's not going to reveal it to anybody. But he's there. His eyes are the size of saucers. This is absolutely fascinating. Is he doing anything wrong without revealing?
It seems that there are two separate isurim, if you look at these achrayim. I mean, the Cherem Beinu Gershem, if I recall, doesn't express it as, and then you're going to reveal it. The information itself, like by Hezekiah, we find concepts of just visual taking in of information is problematic, and it would seem here as well that receiving the information alone in and of itself is problematic. You're correct that the reason of Aftarecha Kamecha may not come in, but Genevasta certainly does, as well as property rights.
Well, but let me just go slowly. Even Hezekiah refers to Hezekiah. It's very questionable whether Hezekiah extends to Hezekshmiah.
No, I wasn't extrapolating from Hezekiah as a raya that this would be usher as well. What I'm pointing out is the idea, the concept of holding information alone has precedent within halacha, so it wouldn't be far-fetched to say, and in fact, if I'm not mistaken, the Cherem Beinu Gershem, as written, is in fact just the taking in of information, even without sharing it. Now, there is a tzad lahat there. And again, we're not discussing halacha lemaisa here on the radio. We know that radio waves go up l'shamayim. They keep going. It's past the Voyager 1 already, radio waves. So everything we're saying is going very high up. So this is not halacha lemaisa. But there are shitas that hold. The Supreme Court had a decision somewhere in the 70s or early 80s that when I throw out garbage, could the FBI come? Is that a giving up of property? That once I put it out there, it's I can't demand...
You surrender proprietorship when you put it in the public domain.
You surrender all the primary rights and title over that information as soon as you put it out there. There are many, I shouldn't say many, but I've seen over the years at least two or three, if I think for a moment I could collect my thoughts and tell you who it was, who do say that it's only in transit, it's only when a piece of mail is in transit that it would be forbidden. But if it's not in transit, which you could extend even if you're deciding to talk to someone in a room and there happens to be a radiator or some type of pipe that allows other people to hear, then that's your problem. It's only that when it's in transit that you're breaching the proprietary right.
But Rabbi Tal, but I would say in excess of that, Chaimer Rabbeinu Gershon would mean it's really about opening somebody else's mail. If the person is reading it aloud and you're listening, there wouldn't be a din of Cherem Rabbeinu Gershon. And we don't extend Cherem Rabbeinu Gershon beyond its parameters. I think to extend Cherem Rabbeinu Gershon and to say any secret is now we can learn. It's not a pasuk in the Torah that we can extrapolate from. He said, don't open or read somebody else's mail. Well, I didn't read somebody else's mail. They were reading it and I heard it.
I think such a strict reading of the Cherem Beinu Gershom, I would strongly but respectfully disagree. That would mean that it doesn't enter into new types of correspondence, like email, because I'm not opening, I'm not ripping. And what if I don't touch it? What if I blow open a piece of mail?
But it would extend to reading somebody else's mail. But if they're reading it out loud and you're listening, I say that's not Cherem Beinu Gershom. You don't take a cherem and extend it. It's not a pasuk. He gave a certain set of laws, and we don't extend past what it says. You know,
you know,
a similar halacha. I'll give you an example where you have such an issue. You have, for example, when they made a cherem against a takana against kitnius. So now the question was, can you use potatoes, right? So one of the things Ramosha writes about it, he says, this is the takana they made, And there's no reason to extend it beyond the takana.
I think that's a very fair point you're making. Although there are those who disagree relating to potatoes and corn, we're not going to go into kidneys, but we know the machlokes, and we certainly follow the view that you're citing. I think this is, though, a difference without a distinction, because based on what you're saying, if you're correct, the way I see it, and many of your listeners and maybe certainly yourself may disagree, is not coming to introduce something new. It's coming to strengthen something old. As to what that old thing is, we gave a number of options. That's how I see it. Like these Achrayim who debate what he's coming to strengthen, but something that predates Rabbeinu Gershom. But based on what you're saying, your reasonable argument, that I hope you understand from my perspective that we're reasonably disagreeing, based on what you're saying, though, it would mean that opening up an email would also not be a problem.
But I would consider that under the rubric of Chaim Rabbeinu Gershon, because what does it matter if you physically open it or virtually open it? But that is today's form of email. But if you read it, it was not about reading out loud. It was about opening somebody else's mail.
Would you agree, however, that according to those Shitas Bachranim who hold that the Isser that predates Rabbeinu Gershom, that he was only coming to strengthen, was, let's say, Genevas Das. Let's assume for a moment. Or perhaps the Rechakamot.
Genevas Das is very, it's a very difficult, it's a tenuous comparison to Genevas Das here. Genevas Das is where you would do a direction or purposely deceive somebody else. If somebody puts information out there and you listen to it, that is not Genevas Das. I haven't stolen anything. You deposited it.
Argument. I'm asking academically, according to those shitas, or according to the shita of Ahaterecha Kamecha, as subjective as that Isser is, as subjective as it is, if I'm sharing information with David Lichtenstein privately, I wouldn't want anybody to hear it. So if he's correct, would you be maskim? Not that you agree with it. But according to those views who say he was coming to strengthen one of these prior Yisurim, wouldn't you then agree that even b'shmiya it would be problematic?
Yeah, if it's also haftal reach kamocha, it would no doubt be problematic. But that's just such a vague thing. It covers almost all of our actions.
The Teres Chaim says, this is an example, and you're right. I mean, we'll get back to this in a second. The Teres Chaim says, for example, it's a property right issue. Very unclear what he means, what the property is. If he holds the property is the letter, then it's the best proof to what you're saying, because you can't have property on intellectual item. But if he means an intellectual property, again, the Teres Chaim would seem to extend.
Let me ask you a question. So, Rabbi Tau, could you tell us, as somebody who's an expert on confidentiality, of first of all, just because I sort of went a little bit of not in a particular order. What is the essence of the Isser to be Megala confidential? I think you sort of said V'haf L'Riach, etc.
Well, the Gemara and Yuma may be one about to point out that Rivka, in this week's Parsha, we're talking now close to Parshas Toldos, as close to Parshas Vayera. Avram was told the Moshe, I haven't seen anybody bring this down, but I'm just pointing this out, that Avram was told about Sarah giving birth to Yitzchak, and then Sarah was told, and she laughs. Why didn't Avram share with her this information for 3 days? He was sitting after the Mila. He kept it to himself. Rivka went to Navi, whoever she went to, as a debate. She couldn't tell Yitzchak, by the way, Esav is a Rasha. She has to sneak around. And I believe it's the Ramban, in the end of Lech Lecha, beginning of Vayera, there's a Ramban a few times in Bereshis who points out some of these questions, and he says that certainly when it comes to even Nevuah, you have to keep it to yourself. So you're right that this is not codified in Shulchan Aruch, but it seems to be throughout our blood. Like Chafetz Chaim says a number of times, certain halachas relating to Lashon Hara is based on Derachecha, Darchei Noam. But the Gemara and Yuma would be the strongest evidence to this.
Can I go off on a little bit on a sidebar? But since we're speaking about, first of all, what's your feeling about cameras, like having cameras around homes, etc., somebody has a nanny and they want to put cameras all around the house to be able to watch their nanny while they're out. Is there any issue with breaching somebody's confidentiality?
So I've dealt with this only when there was let me talk about where I dealt with it, and then we'll discuss your case in particular. I dealt with it when there was a nanny, there was a chashash that she was stealing and doing other things that were untoward. And I told him that this is not an issue. This is your property. You're allowed to do certain types of, play certain types of things within your property. Certainly when it comes to Lamashal, there's a discussion in the postgame, if I set a trap for a thief in my own home, could I be sued? And every state in this union has different laws relating to this. So certainly I would believe that in such a case you could put in cameras. And the regel achas, I would say, stam, I don't really see an issue of placing a camera in a home when you have a nanny. If it's a frum, if it's a Jewish girl, a frum girl, we have to be careful. Because something could go from an issue of monitoring your home for safety to other issues that don't need to be discussed on the radio.
What about putting, what would you say, what's your feeling about putting cameras in classrooms? With all the issues you have today about, you know, molestation, child safety, etc., shouldn't we have cameras in classrooms for the protection of the children and additionally for the protection of the rabbeim? And just as a case, there was a recent incident of a very well-known mechanech in Muncie who was accused by a child of molestation and had to plead guilty. And if he would have had a camera in his office, this never would have been an event. Shouldn't we as demand cameras in classrooms and offices, etc., for both of their safety?
So what I would respond is as follows. It's a brilliant point. Police officers are dealing with this question of having body cameras for the very issue that you say, both to defend the victims and to defend false charges. Molestation is an atomic bomb. It could be used to stop World War II, but it could be used to start World War III. What I would say is as follows, not to reveal secrets about myself, but when I meet with certain people in my office, typically with one person, I record the meeting, especially if I'm talking to a woman one-on-one. I ask them permission if that's the case. This way I could defend myself, not Baruch Hashem. I've never been accused of anything, but every Rav and every Rebbe should defend himself. That's about defending themselves. I would tell every Rebbe if they have the capabilities of doing it and the principal allows it and the students are aware, then adarabba. However, when it comes to the other way around, this is not a halachic issue, but just my personal opinion. I have a friend, you know, most rabbanim have a rabbinic discretionary account, an RDF, Rabbi Discretionary Fund. And most of us have tens of thousands of dollars being passed through Leman HaTzedakah throughout the year. And there was a Rav, a friend of mine, who was charged by his balabatl of stealing these funds. And I wasn't by the meeting where they were ruling on him, but the head of a certain rabbinical group was there, and he said he walked in, and they went to Kinko's and printed these large images of these checks, and they placed it all around the room. And there's something, when you walk in to rule about someone, when you see these grainy images, there's something that seems very guilty. And I think when it comes to having cameras in the classroom, it won't affect them, Chalila, about abuse. But certain, if you only see certain clips of a Rebbe, you could make anybody look horrible. So I would suggest for Rebbeim and for schools to urge Rebbeim to record private conversations with students. Absolutely. Maybe even make it mandatory. And this way, if they're charged, they could show that it's not true. Hopefully show that it's not true. But a school doing it without the confidence and informing Rebbeim, I think it could lead to problems down the road.
Can I ask you a question? I am an employer.
Do you understand the point,
though? Yes, Rabbi Tal, but I am an employer, and I've employed hundreds of women. In Lakewood, I was the largest employer. We had always had 100 women working there. I'm very comfortable having a camera in my office. I have never had an event that I could imagine being turned back where somebody would say, he put his arm around her, and he must have. It never came to that.
Sure.
Like, why would it ever be where a Rebbe's in a classroom, right, grainy image or otherwise, where he's in a situation where you're doing that? Like, never get to that.
I'll give you two examples. Number one is you could have a time where a Rebbe embraces a child. Sadly, today, my best Rebbeim would hug me and kiss me on the forehead. We've erased that. Maybe for a good need, we erase that. But our children don't have that chibub anymore. And these
but respectfully, Rabbi, a camera would allow that again.
Well, perhaps, but there's a second issue, and this is unrelated to molestation. If a Rebbe is teaching whatever topic over an entire year, and there are 172 hours of that, that could be edited to harm them. They're not teaching properly. It could be used. It could be unrelated
true.
To molestation.
Yeah, but that is true. So I think it could be said that these are for the purposes of child safety only, and You know, they cannot be used for any other purposes.
There are Rabbanim involved who have the key to the video, so to speak, or
right.
the Rebbe himself.
Right.
Absolutely. It's a teva kamash malam.
And I want to say it further. Why shouldn't every place of Hechsher have it? There was another case here in Muncie, the famous story with the Muncie butcher, who was being Michael Tarfis to town for, you know, there was a yeshiva in Riverdale. They only took from this butcher out of Chumrah, right? And he was the whole yeshiva ate tarfas for years and years and years. Why shouldn't every place of Hechsher, in other words, the internet has brought to us great damage, but not to use the benefit is sort of silly. Why doesn't every butcher shop, we should demand a camera in the freezer, a camera by the entrance, where anybody who wants from their iPhone can tune in at any time and
I think it's a great idea. Let me respond to
Let's use technology. We so suffer from the negative side of technology. Why not use the positive side of our safe technology to make our children safer, to make our abeyim more safe-proof, to make our butcher shops more kosher?
I think it's a wonderful idea. I will say in Buffalo, where I came from, we actually had a video camera in the butcher shop only because it's in a supermarket, so they paid for it. If we would have put it, let's say, in our cafe, you know, the customer has to be prepared to pay more. But I think it is worthwhile. I think it's a great idea. Rabbi Yashiv Lamashal has a tshuva relating to Chalav Yisrael and video cameras, and we know all the tshuvas about Gittin and video cameras. So we know that Poskim have allowed them for far more serious things, and it really does behoove us, like you say, to come up with original ideas like what you're suggesting, specifically when it comes to meat, specifically after the Los Angeles story and the Muncie story, to give people, let people sleep better at night, and most importantly, to let the Rav, I always tell my Baal about them, when we built an Eruv in Buffalo, we built one of the 10 largest Eruvim, it's 25 miles all around, and the first Shabbos, I'm walking to shul, and I see mothers with their strollers for the first time, and women who have MS, who were confined to their home. And my first feeling was such a simcha, which was followed about 3 seconds later by such dread that I hope I'm not leading people to nichshol. And I think Rabbanim who lose sleep over kashrus, I know I certainly do, and everybody I deal with in the business, quote-unquote, also does. I think these ideas are wonderful, and in fact, we have a meeting coming up, ACO, Association of Kashrus Organizations, and I'll bring it to their attention.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have you, and I know that you also have a very strong knowledge about the laws of copyright, and we'd love to have you on another occasion to discuss that.
I would love it, and I've enjoyed this conversation immensely. You should continue with bracha and hatzlacha and all that you do in your avodas hakodesh and beyond.
Amen. Thank you.
Kol tov.
You're listening to Headlines, Contemporary Halachic Issues. You can listen to us Matzah Shabbos on WMCA 570 from 11 to 12, or at WMCA.com or at NachumSiegel.com. Again, Matzah Shabbos from 11 p.m. to 12 a.m. Or on Monday morning, if you missed it, on Monday morning from 11 a.m. to 12 noon at NachumSiegel.com. Or now on Wednesday evening from 9 to 10 on WSNR 620 a.m. That's WSNR 620 a.m. So we're going to continue our interview last week with Reb David Cohen. And this was a very hot topic now. If you look at the Das Torah blogspot, they have an entire, you know, letters flying about the Hafgas Kedushin that recently happened, basically a marriage annulment or really a Mekach Tois that happened in Philadelphia, Washington, by Rabbi Greenblatt. And here's Reb David Cohen's just a soundbite about Hafgas Kedushin. I want to ask the Rav, there was a recent controversy about an aguna that is being very much discussed here in America right now about a woman in Philadelphia who could not get a get for many years. And Rabbi Greenblatt in Tennessee was mafkia her kedushin. Is the Rav aware of any, like, have you heard the story?
I am aware of the story. It's very difficult for me to comment on the story. I am a bit involved, and I try to give various advice to both sides and how to settle this dispute. I am totally, totally committed that I am against the husband that, albeit he had a very valid claim originally, but now he is simply a ma'agan of Bas Yisrael, and he is perpetrating a Chilul Hashem which has reached the greatest paheskia proportions. And I'm totally against people who are Ma'agin Menais Yisrael, even if they had good claims originally. I'm totally against them, because besides everything, it enables the left, whether the left will call people who like to list themselves as Orthodox, but they don't have too much Yiras Hashem, and certainly conservative Reform, who laugh at the Torah and say, how could the Torah, according to your interpretation, do this evil thing that a woman should be an aguna? So there's a chilul Hashem by a person who's ma'agan ishtai, and it becomes shalai kedin, even if he had a good claim originally. There I'm totally against. But so the real answer is that the husband, given that this was done, whether it was correct or not, now more than any other reason in the world, the husband should give a get.
But is there ever an oifin of afgas kedushin of a long-standing marriage? Is halachically, is there such a concept?
There's such a concept. Unfortunately, people who have no Yerushalayim and really aren't in the Madrega to go and do, they're not making a hafkos kedushin. That is the wrong term.
In
Chazal, you find afkinu rabbanu the kedushin because the Chacham made certain takanas that we're right, that we're with lamafreya being oika the kedushin. That's afkinu. What was done here was things that Gedolei Yisrael, and recently I sent a tshuva to one of the people involved. The tshuva is in the Sefer Zekorin of my Rebbe, Hagoyin Rabbi Yitzchak Kutnes Atzal. It's, I believe, all the way at the end, tshuvas from a Ksav Yad of Rabbi Chaim Berlin, where he writes therein that only Gedolei Hador could make it, could interpret Kedushin to be Mekechtos. In other words, it's not a takon of Afkinu, it's a clarification that the woman never would have done it. Now, people who have no Yerushalayim have not too far in the past. If a woman was married to someone for 10 years and this husband didn't have Hatzlacha as far as Parnassa was concerned, so someone who had very little Yerushalayim claimed it's a Mekach Tos, because if this woman would have known when she married him that he wouldn't be a Baal Parnassa, and they had a nice family too, if she knew that, she never would have married him. Which brings me to the conclusion that if we accept this reasoning, I never would have invested in companies if I would have known that they're eventually going to go bankrupt. So it's a Mekach Tos.
Well, their stock would fall.
In terms called Chuchu Tlula.
Right.
Okay, so you have people who are in certain lines, as you said today, you just set up a bezin, or you set up whatever you want to. Whatever the motivation is, sometimes the motivation is not money. Sometimes the motivation is, I can do it, so I'm like Rav Moshe Feinstein. So it's like COVID, setting up a bezdin to say that I can interpret Kedushin like Rav Moshe did, and I can make a Mekach Tos out of it. So this is, to me, a chuchu tlula, what these people are doing and have done. But again, there is evil in this world.
I mean, the Gemara says that chayve lavin shaloi hikir bohem is still not a mekach tois. If somebody marries an isha and he's a kohen and he finds out she's a grusha, it does not have a din of a mekach tois. Or if he's a isha marries somebody, she finds out he's a mamzer, it does not have a din of a mekach tois. So to be a mekach tois in kedushin, because agav chiba he's mavata. So it seems to.
Where is this halacha?
Of chayvilavin shalai hikar behem, Rav should be meichel. I'll send it to you, but I don't have the whole shulchan aruch on my fingertips like you. But
oh,
I'll send
you
it to you.
Say like me, because if I had it, then I wouldn't have asked you where is it.
Yeah, chayvilavin shalai hikar behem. So,
yes.
So the level of kedushei tois is a very high. It seems to be, but by Chazal, a very high barometer.
Yes.
Well, the halacha is it's brought by the Noida Biyehuda, Madura Tinyana Seminun, and in the Ran in Perik Almana Nizainis. So I didn't know it on the spot, but now I looked after the interview, I found it. I would like to mention that we will have more on this topic. You're listening to Headlines, Contemporary Halachic Issues. You can listen to us Matzah Shabbos on WMCA 570 from 11 to 12. Or at WMCA.com or at NachumSiegel.com. Again, Matzah Shabbos from 11 p.m. to 12 a.m. Or on Monday morning, if you missed it, on Monday morning from 11 a.m. to 12 noon at NachumSiegel.com. Or now on Wednesday evening from 9 to 10 on WSNR 620 a.m. That's WSNR 620 a.m. So last week we were speaking about the Chazal that says, Nesava HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shutfim B'Tachtoinim. Hashem wanted partners in this world to finish off his creation. It says, Ashebara Elokim La'asais. He created the world La'asais for man to complete. So we're always looking here for people who are Shutfim B'Tachtoinim. And as such, we have on the phone with us Rabbi Yehuda Kisira, who's the head of a Bikkur Cholim organization that feeds thousands of people a year and houses over 10,000 people a year. So welcome, Rabbi Kisira.
Good afternoon.
So could you give us like a one-minute snapshot of the breadth of what your organization does?
To sum it up in words, I would try to say as follows. Our organization is here to help people out that are going through sickness, family members that are going through sickness, and to really try to make their road to recovery as comfortable as possible. When people are in the hospital or people are busy with people in the hospital, be it a family member, be it a relative, be it a friend, their loved ones and the ones that are caring for them have one focus. Their focus is to do whatever they can for that patient. What happens is, while people are in the hospital, some of them almost totally forget about their personal needs, and some of them don't have access to take care of their personal needs. If somebody's in the hospital over Shabbos and they don't have a place to sleep, in the good old days, they used to just sit on a chair or a bench in the hospital, or in any hospital where they don't have access to any Bikkur Cholim services, that's what they find themselves doing. Baruch Hashem, over the years, Mr. Lichtenstein, with your help, we were able to set up many, many houses in very close proximity to hospitals and really be able to provide them with a place to stay, a place to take a shower, a place to have their own Dalet Amos, their own four walls that they can be out of the hospital, and really to recharge themselves in order to go back to the hospital to the person that they're caring for or helping for.
Now, I understand that in the Lakewood Bikkur Cholim, you have a commercial kitchen that services approximately 10 hospitals. Could you give us like a 30-second about that?
Okay. The commercial kitchen, which services today over 10 hospitals already, where we constantly prepare. We have groups of volunteers that come in, be it retirees that come in the afternoon, and we actually have a couple of chefs that used to cook professionally. They come in, they put out every night between 50 and 100 meals that go out to the hospitals. We have groups of volunteers, girls that come in the afternoon. They drive out to quite a few hospitals to deliver either the patients in the case where they can eat or the family members that are with them a warm supper. That goes on for the suppers.
And how many volunteers do you have doing this?
The volunteers that do this specific program on a nightly basis are anywhere from 10 to 20 volunteers that are involved between the cooking and the distribution.
And are these mostly girls from the local high schools?
There's girls from the local high schools. There are some other people in the community that come in. Like I said, there are seniors, active seniors that come in and help us out. Then we have, in regard to the distribution, aside to the hot food that we're constantly sending out, we're doing well over 500 sandwiches, deli sandwiches, which we're putting out in all these hospitals in the kosher pantry. I walked in the other night into a kosher pantry late at night, and I saw a person who was able to put his first bite of food into his mouth late at night. He was busy with a family member all day in the hospital. He didn't think much about eating. He was able to take ready-made food, which is fresh straight out of the pantry, which is prepared in the kitchen nightly.
How many meals would you say you prepare a week?
Well over 1,000 meals a week. It's between the hot meals, between the Shabbos packages that we send out. We send out Shabbos between 250 and 300 meals that are going out to all the various Bikachon houses or to the Bikachon pantries.
Is there a charge that you charge for the people who are eating?
Not at all. Not at all.
So you serve 52,000 meals a year, no charge.
Correct.
And around 10,000 nights a year of people sleeping, is what I've been told.
Correct.
So can you tell me, I'm putting you on the spot a little, Rabbi Kisira, but can you think of any stories, like a particular story that stands out to you as somebody who, through your facilities, through your, somebody who you touched?
Somebody who we touched, over the years we've touched many, many people. A story that comes to mind, and something which is perhaps even as perhaps even indirect, but it made such an impact when you realize it. We had a person that stayed in the Bikachon house here last year in the winter. It turns out a couple of weeks after Pesach last year was quite cold, and the person was had stayed over here in the Bikachon house in Lakewood somewhere between a month or two. I met up with him, and he stayed here, and, they were constantly using our services. They were very appreciative. They gave us a little donation here and there. And I met up with him circus time this year. And I said, you've been in the Bikachon house. Like, what was the best thing, or what was the most memorable time you had here? He said, you don't know what it was when I was here in the Bikachon house, and one of the volunteers gave me a coat. He says, I came in from out of town. It was very cold outside, and I thought it was a regular nice spring day. Meanwhile, the weather was well under the 40s. And he says, your volunteer that gave me that coat, you have no idea what it meant to me. And what hit me then is that as much as we help people, it's really people that are going through a situation, and we don't even know what they need. But we don't even know what an impact it has on them. Addition to that, we had many, many stories of people that have come from out of town, from different cities, from different states. We've had literally from across the tri-state area, be it Chassidish, Litvish, Svardish, from Eretz Yisrael. We've had all different people from all different walks and all different types. And the most beautiful thing is, and I know, Mr. Lichtenstein, you've seen this firsthand, is when you see Klal Yisrael together, right over here. Unfortunately, it's in a very sad matzah situation, which people didn't want to get into in the first place. But how everyone is brothers, everyone is sisters, and everyone's caring for each other, no matter what walk of life they come.
So when you help somebody like this, when you bring in the meal to somebody who hasn't eaten all day, when you escort a family into a room and they collapse into their room, do you at that moment in time feel like the Shekhinah is with you?
I wish I was on that madrega, but to be quite honest, the amount of siyata d'shmaya that we see over here, be it arrangements that no one in the world ever thought they would be able to pull off, or, making sure that something happens, and if it's a last-minute thing, a last-minute phone call, there's an emergency, we need to double a hospital with food, you get a phone call like that at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon in the winter. And so many times we've seen like, oh, wow, this person's heading there anyhow, we can get this done. The amount of siyata d'shmaya we see in the work, in our work, is unbelievable.
Well, thank you very much to one of the partners of the Rabbeinu Shalom, one of the tzaddikim of Klal Yisrael, Rabbi Yehuda Kisir. It's an honor to have you on with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Lichtenstein. Thank you for everything you do on behalf of all the Chaylim.
Take care. Well, let me tell you a story that my son Moshe told me about Rabbi Kisir. It's amazing. They opened up Abikachalim opened up a home next to Cornell in Manhattan. And it was 2 years ago, right before Rosh Hashanah. And the family came, called up, and the house was just purchased, and the apartments were not ready or anything. They weren't beds, they weren't furniture, they weren't painted. And the family called them up, and they said, our father is dying, and we'd like to be at Cornell over Yom Tov, 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. So the rooms weren't ready. So we called up Rabbi Kassira, and he said, let me see what I could do. And my son calls me up, and it's Erev Rosh Hashanah, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's 3 hours before, you know, the second holiest day in the year. And he says, you're not going to believe it. I got a call from Rabbi Kassir. He said, I just finished the apartment. I had it painted. The beds are in. The oven is working. The refrigerator is stocked. So my son Moshe said, and where are you? He said, me? I'm about to leave to Lakewood. This is 5 o'clock, Erev Rosh Hashanah in the afternoon. Truly, really, it's Shutfim of Kav Yachal. So before we close, I'd like to once more announce the raffle. We're on WMCA 570, we're on Nachum Siegel, we're on WSNR, that's 6:20 a.m., and we're on WJPR, 16:40 a.m. So we'd like to know where you're listening from. Is it on the internet, from a radio station? So if you send us an email to info@headlinesbook.com, we will have a raffle, and 3 winners each will win $100 to their local forum store. Again, info@headlinesbook.com. All you have to give us is your name and which station you listen to us on. I listen to WMCA, I listen to WCNR, etc. Next week, is Kollel for everybody? We will have Rabbi Aaron Kotler, the president of Beis Medrash Gevoya, the biggest yeshiva in the world. We will also have Dr. Alan Kadish, the biggest Jewish educator in the world, the Dean of Touro. We will have Dr. David Pelkowitz, the world-famous psychologist. I look forward to speaking to you next week. All the best. This is David Lichtenstein for Headlines Radio.